Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Senator Frank Lautenberg, Democrat of New Jersey, as you just heard on the news, has died today at the age of 89. They say it's from complications from viral pneumonia. He was both the oldest member of the Senate and the longest-serving senator in New Jersey state history and the last World War II veteran in the Senate. So the generational shift has become complete if you measure it by any World War II vets remaining in the Senate. In February, Senator Lautenberg had announced that he would not be seeking re-election. So joining me now to talk about both his legacy and the politics of who Governor Christie will appoint to replace him is Bridget Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Professor, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Thanks, Brian. Good morning.
And listeners, we're opening up the phones for anything you want to say about the legacy of Frank Lautenberg or anything you want to say about who Governor Christie should appoint to replace him. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Professor Harrison, after such a long time in the Senate, there is, of course, a lot to any man's legacy at that age and with that amount of experience. But we talked earlier about gun control, which was something that he felt very strongly about, but also very much, I would say, public health. Would you say he was a public health senator?
Absolutely. I mean, many of the things that we now take for granted, for example, the fact that you can't smoke on an airplane, that was because of Frank Lautenberg. And things that are rather commonplace today actually were kind of Bloombergian revolutionary when Frank Lautenberg first proposed those kind of things. Indeed, he was the U.S. senator essentially responsible for compelling states to raise their drinking age. Back in the early 1980s, you know, most states had a drinking age of 18, and it was his idea to link federal highway funding to compel states to increase the drinking age to 21. And, you know, many states were enormously resistant of that, and some states, including the state of Georgia, actually refused for the longest time. But that kind of carrot and stick approach worked, and today, obviously, it's universal throughout the United States. And those kind of measures were the kind of thing, a kind of progressive, liberal view of what the role of government should be in protecting people's interests and compelling them to essentially take care of themselves and each other from a public health standpoint.
Of course, that driving age, or I should say Minimum Drinking Age Act, that every state needed to set the drinking age at 21. That's controversial to this day. That has resulted in, some people think, the increase in binge drinking on college campuses because it's done under wraps instead of, you know, the campus center's own Rathskeller and things like that. So that actually remains a Lautenberg-generated controversy to this day, I think it's safe to say.
Absolutely. And the fact that the federal government would involve itself in what had been essentially a state issue. And I think that this was representative of his viewpoint. He believed in a strong federal government, and he believed in having the government play a strong role in people's everyday lives, whether that was, you know, funding public transportation projects or cleaning up the environment or protecting the environment, or also, as we're talking about, these public health measures.
Back in the 80s when toxic waste was such a big issue in New Jersey, he wrote a bill that established the Toxics Release Inventory, a publicly available database with information on toxic chemical releases inside the United States. And I don't know if you remember that. I actually do remember that. And I don't know if it was naive at the time, but the big thrust in environmentalism at that moment, I think, was toward public information, was toward transparency and disclosure regarding who's polluting who and who's polluting what with what substances around the country. And I don't know, maybe people thought that was going to have more of an impact than it had by citizens of different communities actually looking up what chemicals were being released into their areas and then applying political pressure. But I don't hear anybody talking in those terms anymore.
Well, I think that true. We may think of that as kind of naive and antiquated, but I think coming out of the environmental movement of the 1970s, in which so many environmental movements were localized. We're talking about Love Canal or any of the other kind of anti-nuclear waste movements that tended to be centered on either cancer clusters or other negative environments. I think that Senator Lautenberg believed that people having information about what was happening to their environment would be one of the strongest mechanisms for them to fix the problem, because they could put public pressure in a way that no one else could on their legislators. And one of the results of this was the Superfund, so that Superfund monies would become available in order to clean up those toxic sites. And I think that he viewed this transparency or the availability of this information as kind of one spoke in the wheel that citizens could have in fighting environmental difficulties and environmental toxic sites, and that Superfund and other federal acts, including clean water and clean air, would then be the other part of that equation.
Listeners, we're remembering New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg, who died today in office at the age of 89. We'll get to who Governor Christie might choose to replace him and whether that should be a Democrat, as the people elected Lautenberg as a Democrat, or a Republican, which typically a Republican governor would choose to appoint. So we'll get into the politics future, and we'll get into the politics and the legacy past, and including with your calls at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. New Jersey residents, you've had Frank Lautenberg as a senator pretty much continuously since 1982, except for a two-year break between 2000 and 2002. So call us up with what his representation meant to you, if anything, and what is the legacy of Frank Lautenberg, and then we'll get into the politics of replacing him. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Venera in Glen Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that Mr. Lautenberg, Senator Lautenberg, was a hero in our home, will always be. He, after numerous attempts to try and get my husband's parents from Kosovo legally, somehow the paperwork was getting mishandled. We wrote to him and pleaded that my children's grandparents would be allowed to come legally to visit. And to this day, he's the reason my children knew their grandparents.
Venera, that's a wonderful story. Thank you very much. Let's go. Go ahead. Did you want to say something about that, Bridget?
Brian, I think that is one of the things that when we talk about Senator Lautenberg, that is one thing that many people may not think is the top of his legacy, but the Lautenberg Amendment, which in 1990 made it easier for Soviet Jews to emigrate to the United States, is one of the aspects of his political career that, you know, a spotlight often isn't shined upon, but that has endeared him with many in the immigrant community, that he, you know, did not forget his roots, that he had a soft place for, or a soft spot in his heart for people attempting to make their own American dream like he was able to do.
In fact, Salon's Steve Kornacki has a profile of Lautenberg. I actually ran earlier this year on Capital New York, and he wrote, "Lautenberg excels at the unglamorous constituent service work that many senators neglect, since it comes with no glory. For years, when Lautenberg and former NBA star Bill Bradley both represented the state in the Senate, New Jersey politicos would joke that if your Social Security check was late and you called Senator Bradley, you'd get a 3-page document on his views on entitlement reform. If you called Senator Lautenberg, you'd get your check."
There you go.
Gerald on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hello, Gerald.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not a Jerseyan, but for me, the association is Millicent Fenwick, simply because it was such a kerfuffle in that first race about criticizing her age and then he eventually reaching that age and serving public office. and commenting on that in such a unique and kind of insightful way that he didn't kind of cater to the lowest denominator and say, yes, I know I'm that age and I should step down. He said, I have a unique understanding, and as we grow, we age. And that's someone we always want in the Senate.
Thank you for your call. But there is a political irony there, Bridget, isn't there, about how he did run against Millicent Fenwick to win his seat in the first place?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, you have to recall that Millicent Fenwick was iconic. You know, she was the Lacey Davenport cartoon character. And in addition, was one of very, very few women who had been elected to the U.S. Senate. And so Lautenberg essentially launched an age-based campaign that would come back to haunt him when he was challenged in a primary by Congressman Rob Andrews. You know, I think that that is a relatively common phenomenon. And it really became essentially that age became sacrosanct in New Jersey politics. You couldn't mention the age word because there was that kind of backlash that politicians who did thought that perhaps they would alienate that very important senior citizen constituency. And I think that Frank Lautenberg was one to accentuate that. He was enough of a politician to say, you know, you can't do that, despite the fact that he managed to do it in his first campaign.
And kind of along those lines, here is Frank Lautenberg in his own words. This is from February when he announced that he would not run for an additional term next year.
I'm not announcing a retirement. I'm announcing today that I will be continuing on my mission to do the right thing wherever I can. And I've got 2 years of working opportunity to be here. It's an opportunity to pass new gun safety laws. We're tired of assaults on our children.
And Bridget Harrison from Montclair State, I talked about this earlier in the show, but this was the almost crown and glory of Lautenberg's career, the fact that gun control legislation, which he had felt so strongly about for so long, but it really faded into the distant memory of things Democrats in the Senate cared about, came back, of course, after Newtown, and they got as close as they did with the background checks bill, and there was that whole drama of being ready to bring Lautenberg in from the hospital because he hadn't been attending Senate sessions. He had been too sick this year. But if they needed his vote as the final one to break the Republican filibuster and pass the background check bill, somehow they were going to get Frank Lautenberg to the Senate to vote on this issue that he cared so much about. But they didn't quite make it.
They didn't. And I think that, you know, it would have been, you know, a rather fitting and kind of almost storybook conclusion to his political career. And Brian, you're absolutely right. This is an issue that Senator Lautenberg was passionate about throughout his political career, even when it was out of favor. And obviously, we've seen in the past couple months, you know, that it has resurged as a priority, not just for the Democrats in Congress, but also President Obama. And I think that this would have been something that if Frank Lautenberg could have done anything more on, he would have loved to have concluded his political career with some kind of strong gun control measure, including the background check bill that he was able to vote for. I think that this was clearly a priority throughout his political career, and it is consistent with those other ideas that we were talking about earlier, you know, protecting people from passive cigarette smoke or even preventing them from smoking themselves, increasing the drinking age, and it is consistent with his rather liberal philosophy about what the role of the federal government was to be doing for people.
All right. Phil in Jersey City. Who should Governor Christie appoint to replace him until next year's election? Hi, Phil.
Hi, how are you? I think he should nominate ex-Senator Bill Bradley, since there's going to be a runoff soon. That way, in the spirit of bipartisanship, that he would be a great choice. He's respected by both parties. And I would just like to add one thing. Millicent Fenwick was never a senator. She was a representative from New Jersey. And when Lautenberg ran against her, it was a different party. So it was Republican-Democrat. And when Rob Andrews or Cory Booker ran, they were attacking their own party and Lautenberg's age after he was an esteemed member. He brought respect back to New Jersey after many politicians end up in jail.
Phil, thank you for your call. Any agreement or disagreement on that take on history, Bridget, and on the Bill Bradley thing? Well, just to correct one thing that Phil said, it's not a runoff that the state will be facing. What it is the election for that seat, which is up for election, or it would have been re-election if Lautenberg had run again next year. So whoever the governor appoints, this is going to be short-lived unless that person can get elected to the seat in November of next year. And yet still, it would be to the great advantage of a Republican who, you know, might otherwise not stand much of a chance to have the power of incumbency.
Absolutely right. I mean, so how this process works is that Governor Christie can decide whether to hold a special election in which the U.S. Senate seat is the only seat on the ballot and people can go and vote for a Republican or a Democrat, or he can actually dovetail this election with the November general election, and then that the full term would be up for election in 2014.
When you say dovetail with the general election, do you mean this year's general election? So in addition to the gubernatorial race in November 2013, the Senate seat might be on the ballot?
Exactly, but it would only be for the unexpired term. So then whoever that
one
person
year.
Exactly. And then they would run for the full term in 2014. You have to remember that with the federal government, you need to keep on that six-year cycle because it is not just New Jersey that is electing the Senate, but control of the Senate sometimes involves however many seats are being up. So it has to stay on that 2014 schedule for the full term. But the governor can choose whether to have a special election or to have that election with the November general election. I don't believe that Bill Bradley is somebody that the governor is thinking about appointing, but I do think that in addition to the kind of Republican standard bearers, there are a couple of names that have been mentioned, including Tom Kaine Jr., the state senator, Bill Baroni, another state senator, Kevin O'Toole, and Joe Carolus, who actually ran against Senator Menendez last year. Those are kind of the common Republican names mm-hmm. being bantered about. I have a kind of interesting idea, and that is that Governor Christie may, in fact, appoint the Democratic frontrunner, and that is Newark Mayor Cory Booker, who's already announced his candidacy. He's raised about $2 million already, and he's clearly the frontrunner. He enjoys a bit of a close relationship with Governor Christie. They've worked together on changes to education reform and have a relatively close working relationship. I think that's an interesting prospect because looking at the gubernatorial election, appointing a Democrat and especially appointing an African-American Democrat who is mayor of one of the city's largest or the state's largest cities would really ingratiate him to a constituency that may not otherwise be in his corner.
Let me bring in another guest for a few minutes because we have on the line now, in addition to Bridget Harrison from Montclair State, Congressman Bill Pascrell, Democrat from the Patterson area. Congressman, thank you for joining us.
And good morning, Brian.
How well did you know, how closely did you work with Frank Lautenberg over the years?
Well, we were very close. From the same town, we drank the same drinking water, I guess. That's the reason why. And I knew of Frank's very, very humble upbringings. He really loved his parents. He loved his family. Moved around North Jersey a little bit after leaving Patterson. Very dedicated to Patterson. His roots were always here. Never, ever, ever turned his back on our town. And I just knew him as an individual. I knew how hard he worked to start that company. And the guys that joined him, they didn't know what they were getting into at the time. For a small investment, look what one of the great corporations in the world, ADP. And this is just a reflection of who this man was about. So it's tough for me to talk about the politics of the situation, Brian, because there's a sacredness here. I mean, this is an icon. This is not Democrat and Republican or liberal or conservative like we're usually reduced to. You're usually beyond that, and I hope you understand what I'm saying. This is a guy who really believed in his constituents, really believed in the people of New Jersey, and believed in America. He served his country, and he loved He loved Israel. He loved the Jewish people. Billy's very, very philanthropic to the nth degree. I love the guy. I got along with him. Did I agree with him on everything? I don't know. We used to argue and have discussions back and forth all the time. But I pray for his family. I pray for all of his close friends and the people that he worked with all of his life, the members of Congress. You know, when people start to talk about tidy conclusions to people's demise as politicians, whether it be resignations or, unfortunately, death, most of the time we don't know what we're talking about. You know what can happen, Brian. Anything can happen in this kind of a situation. I pray for the governor that he'll show wisdom in deciding what he's going to do and not simply be a political trick. I pray for the governor. I have confidence that he'll make the right decision. And I pray for New Jersey and the country because he's missed in transportation and against gun violence, pollution, you name it. Frank was there, and we're going to miss him big time.
Hey, just one other thing about his upbringing and his early life. As you say, he's from the city in your district, Patterson. His father.
And I lived there all my life myself.
And his father died when the father was just 43 years old.
That's correct.
Frank Lautenberg used the GI Bill after he was in World War II to go to college. He went to Columbia. And
yes.
And then back to New Jersey. So just a little bit of the early Frank Lautenberg story. Is there?
He was not a spectator, Brian.
Absolutely not. And before you came on the line, we spent a lot of time talking about the legacy of the man and the politician. Is there anything else you would want to say, though, on what you think is the right thing for Governor Christie to do?
No, but I'm not blowing smoke. You're the kind of program that gives credence to basically who this man was, because you can get beyond the pontificating, get beyond the politics, get to who the real man was. This is a guy who really cared about people. As I said, we didn't agree on everything, but that was immaterial because you were talking to a real human being who really wanted to change things for the better. And he wasn't going to be a spectator in his personal life or in the body politic, and he certainly wasn't. He was involved in anything and many things, including foreign policy. He really loved his country. Really loved his country, Brian.
Congressman Bill Pascrell, thanks for remembering Senator Lautenberg for a few minutes with us.
God bless.
And we will leave it there with Bridget Harrison as well, professor of law and politics at Montclair State, except to ask, Professor, how quickly do you think Governor Christie would have to decide? And I actually hadn't been aware of that one option that you laid out, which was that he could hold a special election this November. I guess in a way that would be the politically safest thing for him to do, because then he wouldn't have to appoint anyone at all, right? That seat would just stay vacant until November, and then he could kind of throw up his hands and say, you know, I didn't do anything.
Right. And it also is appealing because then whoever the Republican nominee would be running on the same ticket as Governor Christie. So that is a relatively safe and also cost-effective measure. But I think that Congressman Pascrell is absolutely right. You know, in addition to speculating about all of the politics that's surrounding us, which is totally natural, the reality is that the state of New Jersey lost a very true and loyal public servant today. And, you know, whether you agreed with him politically or not, this is a gentleman who gave essentially his public life for his country and for the people of the state of New Jersey. And, you know, it's been wonderful to have the opportunity to think about that and talk about that with you and your listeners.
Indeed. And, of course, those of you who commute on NJ Transit or New Jersey buses through Secaucus, take a moment to look up as you make your transfer today. As you probably know, you will be passing through Frank Lautenberg Station. Bridget Harrison, thanks a lot.
You bet, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, former New York State Chief Judge Judith Kaye on the criminalization of high school. Stay with us.